coming up next on the Sunday edition of Bathrop Spears Broadsides here at 96.3 FM. Bathrop Spears Broadsides, of course. The August 17th edition, and special interview coming up shortly with Robert Letterman, direct from New York City. Stay with us.
Just a scam. Pretty simple equation. There's 99 people like you for every cop, landlord, and politician. And if we learn to just say no, there'd be no more taxes, no more work, and we'd all own our own homes. We are all controlled. We are all controlled. We are all controlled. We are all controlled. If you don't go to work every day, if you don't pay your rent every month, if you don't pay your taxes every year, if you don't bow down to our fear, you will starve in the street. You will freeze in the street. You will die in the street. You will die in the street. You will die alone. It's a pretty simple equation. It's all about restitution. It's all about reparation. It's all about revolution. My life is mine. My time is mine. My work is mine, and I don't work for you anymore. My life is mine. My time is mine.
Welcome to Bathrop Spears Broadsides. I'm Robert Norse. This is Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM, also www.freakradio.org, in case you're interested in tuning us in there. This show runs until 1 o'clock Pacific Daylight Time. I say that because we may have some listeners on the East Coast this morning. Robert Letterman of Artist, Artist's Response to Illegal State Tactics, a New York City organization of street artists, will be calling in about 5 or 10 minutes. And you, too, can call in Well, after he calls in, which would be probably 10:15, 10:30, depending on how long we talk, you're also welcome to try to email me if you've got a question for Robert Letterman that you want answered on air. R. Norse is my email, R-N-O-R-S-E, rnorse@hotmail.com. And I will be trying to keep an eye on the incoming emails, if any come in, and pass on those questions to Robert Letterman. I'm going to give you a kind of a brief description. You can also go to his website. He has a website, and it is at, let me see if I can give you the exact address here. It's http://groups.yahoo.com/group/NYC Street Artists. And again, I'll give that to you again. It's groups.yahoo.com/group, all these in small letters, /NYC S Street. Street is a capital S, small T-R-E-E-T, capital A for artists, A-R-T-I-S-T-S. So again, groups.yahoo.com/group/NYC Street Artists. That should get you to his website. A lot of information there. And we have an incoming call. Let's see who we got on the line here. Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hey, Robert. This is Vinny.
Hey, Vinny.
I would venture to guess that that's a listserv, not really a website. I'm guessing just by the address you gave.
Huh.
I could be wrong. I don't know. That's what it sounds like to me.
Okay.
It sounds like people would go to that site and sign up to get, like, updates in their email.
Interesting, because he has it as a link on one of his emails, and I was able to go directly there without signing up.
Huh. Maybe I'm wrong. I don't know. It's mm-hmm. just what it sounded like. Anyway.
Were you able to catch the address? I know it's a kind of a long website. I wonder if others out there were able to catch it.
I didn't. I'm at work. It just sounded like a list.
Yeah, no, I appreciate you trying to pass that on.
And maybe you can, I'm sure this will probably come up, but I'm sure the blackout, I'm kind of interested to hear his perspective on that and how New Yorkers kind of rallied around each other. Maybe, you know, when he calls in.
Sure.
Talk about that.
In fact, actually, I have something on that now, and I'll start talking about it.
Cool.
Thanks.
Bye.
Bye-bye. So, yeah, that's you can actually do that right now, but Vinny just did. If you have a question for Robert Letterman, who has been on this show before, talking about his legal successes around street performers, he actually won a case, I guess, last month after a 5.5-year struggle. I'm going to read a little bit about that. Maybe I can get in a few words before Robert calls in. Let's see what we got here. Of course, it's always problematic with me on the computer, but let's see what we can get here. Yeah, going to this website again. New York City Street Artists is a news group for members of ARTIST, A-R-T-I-S-T, Artists Response to Illegal State Tactics, founded in 1993. The group is about the legal and political struggle to get and maintain full First Amendment protection for the creation, display, and sale of art on New York City streets and in parks. I want to remind you that Santa Cruz makes it criminal to display or sell your art on Santa Cruz streets. And according to decisions won by Robert Letterman in federal court, though not yet at the Supreme Court level, but at the level right below the Supreme Court, that is unconstitutional to repress, suppress, fine, jail people, as Mike True was cited and I guess taken to jail, or at least arrested by Sergeant Baker last year ago this summer for displaying his CDs. Mike True is a musician who is a local street performer. He'll be part of the performing group and invite you all to come on September 5th and 6th at the Loudon Nelson. That's, of course, it's a paid event. You got to grab a ticket. I think it's $10. Proceeds are going to go into the Street Performers Fund to hopefully address, well, I'm hoping it's going to address issues like civil rights for street performers. It's certainly going to be addressing the interests of street performers as seen through the eyes of people like Tom Noddy and other longtime street performers or former street performers and now street performer organizers here in Santa Cruz. And Tom actually still is performing. He was doing some juggling and risking his butt and going to jail to change the juggling law. And we'll be talking about that later, too, in terms of what all that means and how that links in with the upcoming event on September 5th and 6th, if that's at all. But again, getting back to Robert Letterman, who's coming on the show shortly, reading from his website, members of ARTIST, Artists Response to Illegal State Tactics, have won numerous federal lawsuits about the right to sell art on public property without a license or permit. And we're going to read right now, Vinny was asking about, you know, what happened during the blackout. Here's an article from his dated August 15th. A lot of stuff he's written over the last decade and probably before. And here's what he writes. Here's a good example of a media source having an agenda against vendors. The entire East Coast blacks out due to deregulation of the utilities by corrupt elected officials. Pedestrians have to direct traffic despite the city having 40,000 cops. The Times Square BID business, it's a business district, I guess, BID's hotels evict tourists and make them sleep on the street. So what does the New York Times coverage focus on? Vendors exploiting the situation. Portrait artists still making their sales. They never miss a chance to attack street artists and vendors. The Times publisher founded the Times Square BID business district, which is very anti-vendor and anti-street artist. And we have a similar business district here in Santa Cruz, Downtown Association, headed by Keith Holtaway, and giving us the anti-homeless downtown ordinances, or backing them anyway. They came a lot from Candy Jackson's petition and the fertile minds of Ed Porter and Emily Riley a year ago, in the summer of 2002. The first director of the BID in New York City was Gretchen Dykstra, who now heads the DCA, the city agency in charge of vending. Quote, some hot dog vendors doubled their prices. On 125th Street... On 125th Street near Lenox Avenue in Harlem, a young man walked around offering flashlights. $25. Batteries, $10. An elderly woman pushed a grocery cart filled with ice-cold water. She was asking $5 a bottle. This is all from the story that Robert Letterman is criticizing. The bottles were hot. Still, the street sweepers in Times Square... mentioned here because they work for the Times Square business district, did not miss a beat. They pushed their brooms as if it were any other Thursday night. It was the same for the recruiters at the Armed Forces booth and the breakdancers and the portrait artists. And in essence, the take that Robert has on how street performers are affected by the blackout, at least in terms of the media, is his critique of this article, which he actually prints as a longer article. I'm not sure if it's entirely relevant. Let me skim through it here to see. A lot of stuff about problems with the blackout. And then again, there's this quote about how the street vendors are profiteering off the blackout while everybody else is helping. That's, I guess, how he saw the blackout. We can ask him, of course, and we will when he calls in. A couple more things about the recent court decision that he successfully pressed to a conclusion. To scroll down to it here. The Artist News Update is 724. That's Artist's Response to Illegal State Tactics, his organization. It gives this message. Police harassment continues. Throughout the city, illegal harassment has dramatically increased. In Soho, the New York Police Department has been issuing numerous summonses for being less than 15 feet from a fire hydrant. This is not the law for street vendors. You are not allowed to touch the fire hydrant or tie your display to it, but you can be right next to it. There is a 15 foot from a fire hydrant rule, but it's for ice cream trucks and other vending vehicles parked in the street. In Times Square, the police are openly flouting the vending laws and in some instances literally telling artists they don't care what the law is. You must get these statements on tape. Anecdotes about them are worthless from a legal position. Of course, this is very analogous to Santa Cruz, where police have been kind of making up their own rules as they go along, and then, of course, choosing to ignore all the rules when they find that arresting people like Steve Argue and Matthew Hartog for having a table for more than 61 minutes in front of the Pacific Trading Company under the new Matthew Rotkin move-along law is kind of unpopular. So suddenly they're not doing any arrests or warnings, which I suppose is certainly it's good, but of course it means if there's no change in the law, they are simply laying low until the public hubbub dies down. And it has to be said, Steve Argue is going to pretrial for two misdemeanors and an infraction on September 11th in court. I think it's Department either Department 1 or 2 at 10 a.m. for those who are interested. Steve Argue, the activist who was arrested twice for the crime of having a table for more than 60 minutes in front of the Pacific Trading Company. Recently, police are once again telling artists, jewelers, this is in New York City, and craft vendors that only if you make it yourself, it's legal to sell it. Last week, they summoned an artist for having framed pictures, claiming that only the picture could be sold, not the frame. These imaginary rules are neither the law nor an accurate reflection of the rulings in our lawsuits. They've done this exact same thing before, then a few months earlier, later reversed themselves and arrested the very people they had previously told that they were legal. There is a specific reason for them doing this, and it is not to help you. The city wants to avoid a lawsuit by craft vendors and jewelers, which, if won, would create an entirely new group of legal vendors. By avoiding arresting those who make their own work, they are keeping those who might have the best chance of winning such a lawsuit from getting arrested and thus having a legal basis to sue for their rights. Those who make their own work are likelier to have crafts or jewelry which expresses a viewpoint, an idea, or an opinion, and which would therefore be entitled to First Amendment protection. However, you need to understand that making it yourself actually has nothing to do with this issue either way. It is the communicative nature of what you are selling, not who made it, that decides the First Amendment protection. My personal belief is that some jewelry and some crafts are surely worthy of First Amendment protection. Political and religious jewelry are two examples where the issue is clearly one of speech. CDs made by an artist to sell their work on disc, videos, not copyright-infringed videos, but those being legally sold, and other non-traditional medium are also surely worthy of being considered protected by freedom of speech. How, for example, could a photograph be legal, but a videotape made of thousands of photos not be legal? In our first lawsuit, the ruling stated it was up to the courts to decide in each case what was and what wasn't protected. That's exactly what the city is trying to keep from happening by this latest policy. If you are selling jewelry or crafts, enjoy the new policy, but remember it is very important that you record every single thing the police are telling you. Then, if a month later they claim the exact opposite and then arrest or summons you, you can prove exactly what they were telling you. Here's today's issue of, this is actually about 2 weeks ago or a week ago, actually, I'm not quite sure of the date. Here's today's issue of The Villager on our federal court victory. Note that the lawyer representing the city is still claiming they can make an artist permit in parks after seven courts have ruled that they cannot. All she is really saying is that the city will do whatever it likes, including violating the law and the U.S. Constitution, to get us. If they make a permit, we will defeat it yet again. And please, remember her quote when you try to understand the politics driving our issue. The wealthiest and most powerful people in New York City want to get all street artists and vendors off the streets and out of the parks to make way for corporate advertising via the Street Furniture Initiative, the SFI. Until you understand the SFI, you cannot understand the real purpose behind the city's efforts to get rid of vendors. If you didn't read my articles on this from earlier this week, please read the excerpt from them below. There's nothing more important to your continued right to sell on the street than understanding the Street Furniture Initiative. I wonder if Santa Cruz has something coming up like that, too, though I haven't heard of anything. Let's see here. And I'll try and skip down to what I promised, which is the... let me read a little bit more of this, because I think Robert will be talking about this on the air, and might be good to give it an introduction. A brief comment on the quotes in the articles below. Those behind the scenes directing policy in New York City have no more regard for original artists than for the vendors of copyright-infringed merchandise. A brilliant artist showing a few small pictures by the curbside is no less an eyesore and obstruction to them than a crack dealer is. This is a sad thing, but it is the reality we face. They want to eliminate original artists and disabled veteran vendors as surely as they want to eliminate art vendors, food vendors, and general merchandise vendors. In order for the multi-million dollar Street Furniture Initiative advertising scam to go into effect, the vendors who now legally sell in spots which are 20 feet from a door and 10 feet from a corner will first have to be removed. These are the exact locations where the kiosks, billboards, and other street furniture covered with ads must be located based on zoning law. West Broadway would be one of the five most desirable advertising locations in all of New York City due to the tourists and wealthy shoppers who go there. Another particularly desirable location for the ads would be in front of the Met. Times Square is yet another location for them. One could say that the five most likely places to find a street artist just happen to be the five most desirable advertising locations in New York City, thus the very places we can absolutely expect the street furniture to be located. Much of it will be inside parks. Unless the city can get a permit system to use against us, whereby they can limit the number of artists citywide to 20 or 50 or 100, there's no way they can restrict us from all of these otherwise legal spots. That is why certain people who work with the city are promoting the false idea of vending art being limited to, quote, original artists only. In order to so limit it, a permit is absolutely needed. Saying you want to limit art vending to original artists but are against a permit is double talk. Signing a piece of art does not prove anything about who made it. Galleries are filled with art made by people other than the one whose name is signed on the work. Aside from that, most of the art created in the course of human history was unsigned. To promote this arbitrary concept of original artists only is to deliberately ignore the Berry decision, Letterman et al. Versus Giuliani, People of Balamuth, the New York vending law, and the First Amendment itself. The final resolution of all of our lawsuits was that art vendors can sell anywhere without a permit or license. That's what it says in black and white. Art vendors is the exact term used by the city in these lawsuits and in the consent decrees which finalized them, despite the fact that most of the plaintiffs were original artists. The description in the Berry decision of paintings, prints, photographs, and sculptures applied to what we sold, not to who made it. Likewise, the written matter exemption in the vending law does not only exempt authors from a permit, it exempts vendors of written matter. You don't need a law degree to understand this simple fact. And getting back to Santa Cruz, Joe Williams was talking to me about this the other day. A local activist said he wants to be able to sell books on the street, and he feels that it's legal in accord with this New York decision, and he's willing to do it if he can get a lawyer to back him up, and that may be coming down the pike soon here in Santa Cruz. You don't need a law degree to understand this simple fact. Those who continue to try to obscure it have their own agenda, which has nothing to do with helping street artists. Being an original artist myself, I would seem to have everything to gain if I went along with this nonsense. The key point is seem. The reality, I'd have everything to lose. The only purpose of limiting art vending to original artists is to justify the necessity of a permit. That's the only way a police officer could tell who is qualified. Once there is a permit, the city can make any requirements to get it that they want, charge any amount they want, distribute it by lottery, or make us competitively bid for it and limit the total number of artists to whatever arbitrary number they choose. Those who think they have a political benefactor who will make sure they get the permit are being very short-sighted. Like life itself, political benefactors come and go. Having the protection of the law and the First Amendment may not be eternal, but it's a lot more long-lasting and dependable than an empty promise by a severely compromised official who will eventually be out of office either by term limits or by losing an election. The city already has hundreds of rules for regulating street artists, veteran vendors, and all other vendors. These rules, of which there are far too many, are surely enough if regulation was what they wanted. It isn't. They want elimination. I'll be the first to admit that they can't eliminate us with the existing rules. As Martha Stewart would say, that's a good thing. So far, we've won every battle in the 9.5 years of struggle for street artists' rights, and we've never compromised any basic principle of free speech in order to gain some personal benefit. We have no intention to begin doing so now. Please continue to support ARTIST, the group which advocates for First Amendment protection, full First Amendment protection of all street artists. ARTIST's response to illegal state tactics. And now, I want to point out before I go on, in Santa Cruz, I'm going to court on another ticket for playing a television set allowed on the sidewalk in front of the Pacific Trading Company. I was showing a video about police misconduct around the Pacific Trading Company, and Sergeant Baker came up without any warning and gave me and a second person a citation for not having a permit. If Mr. Letterman is correct here in Santa Cruz, and it sounds like he's correct in New York City, and I see no reason why there's any difference between the two jurisdictions, then we have a right to play our television sets on the sidewalk, provided, you know, we meet appropriate time, place, and manner restrictions, but we cannot be required to get a permit to do so. Similarly, with artists on the street. Looks like we got an incoming call. This could be our man. Hi, you're on Free Radio. Hello?
Robert Letterman here in New York.
I hear you loud and clear, Robert. How are you?
Good.
All right. I've just been reading some of your stuff from your website. I just read the story you wrote on July 24th, the Artist News Update.
Okay. I don't remember what was in it at this point. Can you talk a little louder?
Sure. Can you hear me now?
Now I can hear you better.
Okay. Let me turn this. Now can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay. You spoke in this particular one, you talked about how the permit process, requiring a permit, or actually requiring original art as some kind of criteria, sets all the artists up to lose their rights because it allows a permitization process. And you wrote about this. I just read that.
Okay.
And I was about to read, and perhaps you can summarize for us, your federal court victory in July. That I haven't discussed or even mentioned in any specific way yet.
Are we on air?
We are on air.
Okay.
Actually, let me introduce you before we go any further. I'm talking to Robert Letterman of New York City Live. Robert is president of ARTIST, ARTIST's response to illegal state tactics. and you are a two decade long fighter for the rights of street performers and artists.
One decade as a fighter for it. I've been working on the street since 1962, but began the fight in 1993.
Uh-huh. And you apparently have recently had a victory in that fight. I guess another victory. You've had a series of victories. You want to tell us about that?
Sure. The Second Circuit Federal Appeals Court just issued a ruling a few weeks ago in Letterman et al. V. Giuliani. That was a lawsuit that we brought in 1998 challenging the New York City Parks Department artist permit requirement. We initially won the lawsuit in 2001 in the lower court. The city appealed it, and now we won a complete victory in the appeals court. What the ruling means is that the city of New York can't require a permit for artists who want to create, display, or sell their work in or around any park in New York City. So it's a huge victory, obviously, for street artists. It's also a tremendous victory for the general public, because this means that the right to give out leaflets or make a speech will also have to be protected in the same way and to be free from any permit. So it's a very significant First Amendment victory. It's the fourth First Amendment lawsuit that I've won. And unfortunately, the city didn't even wait 24 hours before reappealing it back to the same court, which has virtually zero chance of even being heard. But the significance of that appeal is just to show that they never give up this fight to impose an arbitrary permit system on First Amendment protected street artists, vendors, activists, you name it. And that's all part of a much larger agenda that's going on throughout the country, obviously, not just in New York City.
Now, this has to do with parks only, or parks and sidewalks both?
Well, this ruling has to do with parks, but in New York City, there are parks in every neighborhood, and the Parks Department, by law, claims jurisdiction of everything within 350 feet of a park. And a park can be defined, according to them, as nothing more than a tree pit, basically, that has their insignia on it. If they have a tree pit on a block, they claim jurisdiction over everything within 350 feet of that.
Huh.
So this would mean, for example, around Central Park, which is bordered on one side by Fifth Avenue and on the other side by Central Park West, that not only Fifth Avenue, but Broadway and Madison Avenue and even parts of Park Avenue across from Central Park, which is about 50 or 60 blocks of the primest section of Manhattan real estate, that their rules, that they have jurisdiction over what goes on in that area. And, of course, they don't usually enforce it except in a very selective way, usually against political activists and, other than that, against street artists.
How broadly applicable is this decision? I imagine you've been keeping an eye on other parts of the country, too. Have other parts of the country, other courts, other federal courts at the same level held in the same ruling that you can't require permits, just, I guess, reasonable time, place, and manner regulations for these kinds of distributions of material?
Well, as you know, there are 12 federal districts in the United States, and a ruling in any particular district, while it has significance to the whole country, it's only that district is bound to follow it. So this ruling only makes actual law in New York and parts of New Jersey and Connecticut.
Right, but what about other districts? Have you heard, have other street artists been making similar appeals and fighting similar?
Right. Well, as you know, you've interviewed me over the years. Our first ruling was in 1996, where we overturned the license requirement for the streets. And since then, street artists in a number of states have taken that ruling to their mayor, to their city council, and either gotten concessions from them allowing artists to sell, or in their own right have sued their city, and in some cases have won victories, in other cases were less successful. But as a result of the work that the group that I'm the head of has been doing since 93, there are now rulings in California, Florida, Arizona, I believe in Idaho, and possibly in some other cities that I'm also in Hawaii, and possibly in other states and cities that I simply haven't heard about, all based on this initial ruling that we won in 1996, which is, it's known as the Berry decision. It was a consolidated ruling on two lawsuits, Berry et al. V. City of New York and Letterman et al. V. City of New York. And everybody in those, both of those lawsuits were members of the group that I'm the president of, Artist.
Hmm. So actually in California, you've heard of cases being won around this same principle?
Yes.
Huh. Any specific details in any of that stuff?
Well, nobody has won the kind of victory that we did here in New York, where there's no permit now and no license, period, where you can sell anybody's artwork, not just your own. Other cities, for example, I think it's in Laguna Beach, California, if I'm not mistaken, there's an area where you can sell art, but you, based on using my lawsuit, but they still require a permit. Previously, they didn't let you sell any art at all, with a permit or without. And that's the direction, certainly, that that cities are more willing to go. The permit is really the key issue for the cities. It's not whether the artists are going to be able to sell the work or vend the work or show the work. They're not really concerned one way or another about that. The permit in and of itself is the goal for them, because the permit requirement is the first, for First Amendment protected activities, is the first necessary step to enable the government to privatize freedom of speech on public property. Mm-hmm. And what their agenda really is nothing to do with regulating vending or street artists or panhandlers or even political activists. They want to basically privatize, sell off all of this incredibly lucrative public property for the purpose of advertising. And here in New York City, while this 10-year now fight has been going on with between my group and the city, there's been a continuous effort to pass what's called the Street Furniture Initiative. And interestingly enough, you're having me on today as a guest, there's going to be a vote by the full city council on the Street Furniture Initiative this coming Tuesday. Now, the Street Furniture Initiative, it may have a different name in your city or in other cities where people might be accessing this information, but it's all basically the same thing. The government claims that they need money, which is certainly true, and the way that they want to raise those funds is to sell advertising rights on the actual public property. Now, I'm not against advertising at all. Advertising is also protected by the First Amendment, and certainly in a free enterprise system, advertising is a absolutely fundamental part of culture and communication. Otherwise, companies or individuals don't have a way to let people know what their product is. The difference between this advertising and the advertising we're all familiar with is that this is going to be on public property. And here in New York City, this vote on Tuesday, it's going to involve, if the city council votes for it, and all the indications are that they will, it's going to give a far right-wing media company, Clear Channel Communications, which is as intimately connected to G.W. Bush as you can get, a 20-year lease on thousands of locations on the public sidewalks and in parks to set up what you could call mini billboards or kiosks. These billboards and kiosks are eventually all going to be digital. In other words, they'll be showing video, they'll be sound, there'll even be, as the New York Times recently had an article on, there'll be subliminal advertising messages that will individually target you. There'll be a sensor, some kind of video device in the billboard, which will look at your profile. It'll determine that you're a male or a female. It may determine other things about you from your profile, and it will pitch to you based on that profile. So, for example, if you're a middle-aged woman and you pass that ad kiosk, you're going to hear a different ad and see a different ad than if you're a teenage boy.
Sounds like Minority Report. Huh?
Yeah, very much so. Mm-hmm. And these, unlike the advertising that we see today, where it's on TV, which you can turn off, or on private property on the side of a building, this is going to be advertising everywhere you go. It'll be impossible to escape it unless you never leave your house. So apart from that aspect of it, the more sinister aspect of it is that in order to give a company like Clear Channel Communications a 20-year contract for all this property, they're going to have to guarantee them that it's an exclusive right to use this public property. In order to do that, they have to eliminate people like vendors, street artists, political activists, people selling Bibles, panhandlers, you basically name it. Anything that falls under the general category of the First Amendment is going to have to be eliminated, because otherwise, these companies won't have an exclusive right. If Disney, for example, is going to pay $1 million to set up, to have their latest movie advertised on a couple of these sidewalk billboards in Times Square, and I can stand in front of the billboard for free selling my artwork, that's not a very good deal for Disney. And the city understands that. So what they're going to do is try to get rid of me. And if you're a visitor here and you want to hand out leaflets, they're going to try to get rid of you. And the way they're going to do that is not to ban the First Amendment. That even now, that might still be impossible, although I'm guessing. Certainly the way the government's going, it may not be impossible. But the very real and very possible way they're going to do it is via a permit. The thing that most people don't understand about permits, and I've been talking about them for 10 years straight, even people that are supporters of street artists and of First Amendment activities really don't understand the basic issue of a permit. It's not about how much the permit is. A permit could be $1, or it could be $1,000, or $1 million. And there are permits in New York City that start at $1 million. For example, if you want to close off all of Central Park, as Disney and other companies have done, to promote a movie, the city will charge you $1 million for that permit. The issue about the permit, though, is not the price. It's the fact that there is a permit, because along with any permit, there's an application process. Now, if you think about what this issue really is, the First Amendment, what does the First Amendment say? Congress, in other words, the government, shall make no law abridging freedom of speech. It doesn't say they can't charge too much money. It doesn't say they can't preclude certain groups. It says they can't make any law. Now, why is that a problem if they do make a law? Well, the First Amendment was created to protect unpopular speech, which more likely than not is going to be aimed at the government. So the idea that you would have to go, for example, here in New York, to some employee of Mike Bloomberg, the mayor, and ask for a permit to set up a table to criticize Mike Bloomberg, this is very problematic. You may not want Mike Bloomberg to know your address and your phone number and your legal history and your income and everything else. Even if they would give you that permit for free, you may be intimidated by having to give that information. And that's why, not the amount of the permit, not the cost of it, but the fact that you would even have to apply for it has a definitely suppressive effect on freedom of speech. And obviously, if you extend this concept out. I mean, imagine if you had to go to, if you were living in Nazi Germany or in the Soviet Union during Stalin, imagine the impossibility of going to Hitler or Stalin and saying, hey, I want to get a permit to criticize the government. You'd be locked up immediately. Not only wouldn't you get the permit, you'd probably be executed. And even here in the United States at this point, surely if the president is going to appear at a venue, and if you go to the government and say, I want to hold a protest there, I want to criticize President Bush, you know very well, just from the newspapers, what the result's going to be. First of all, you're going to be on a list, which you would rather not be on. Second of all, you're not going to get the permit to do anything remotely like what you're asking to do. You will be singled out because of that permit, and while other people without a permit will be able to get fairly close to see the president, you'll be kept blocks away. And only because of the fact that you got the permit. Based on freedom of speech, you would have a right to get fairly close. Bush doesn't let people get more than two blocks from him, as I understand it, when he makes appearances, other than carefully invited people. But if you have that permit, you'll be four blocks away. So the permit is really, ultimately, it's a permit to deny you your First Amendment rights. It's not a permit to give you anything.
Yeah, I think that's a really important point, Robert. We're talking with Robert Letterman of New York City, who is the president of Artist, which is Artist's response to illegal state tactics. It's not just, I guess, people with unpopular speech that are impacted. It's a lot of people who simply don't have power, the kind of power that these large corporations that intend to replace public spaces with private advertising have. Isn't that a consideration as well?
Well, Clear Channel Communications, the owner, is the guy that arranged for G.W. Bush to buy that baseball team, which made him, that was his start in being wealthy, and that was his entry into politics. This is as close to being influential in the government as you can get. Turning over these public spaces to this company is akin to saying that President Bush owns all the public spaces in New York City now. And as I think your listeners may know, the Republican convention is going to be in New York City in 2004. Now, that means that all of this public space around Madison Square Garden, which is as prime Manhattan real estate as you can get, is going to be controlled by this company that's completely in bed with G.W. Bush. So what kind of chance are political activists going to get to have any kind of message get out during that event? This is all very carefully pre-thought out, coordinated among these people, and their agenda is to take away your right to freedom of speech. You said, well, it's not just about unpopular speech. I would put it this way. Any kind of speech, from these people's point of view, from corporate America's point of view, any kind of right to free speech that you have, to them, that's unpopular. They don't want you to have speech. They want to have the corporate, sanitized kind of speech that you see on Fox News, rooting for the war, rooting for Bush, completely disinforming the public about every kind of event that's happening. Hang on a second. You just got to wait a second. That they want to eliminate the very concept of freedom of speech that is the fundamental idea that this entire nation is based on.
Let me ask you this, Robert. In Santa Cruz, we have, indeed, they've started initiating permits for street musicians who are, and street performers, anybody with a display device, in fact, who wants to be in the public spaces for more than 1 hour. We talked about this a couple months ago. You proposed setting up some clocks and having a bunch of people essentially hang out for 3 hours, past the hour with their synchronized clocks. We actually have had people, not with clocks, but who have gone to jail protesting this ordinance, and they're going to trial next month. Steve Argue goes to trial, pretrial on September 11th for violating the move-along law, as we call it. But I'm wondering, in Santa Cruz, the percentage of space that people have
that street performers, vendors, even poor people who want to have any free speech message at all, people who even just want to sit down without a free speech message, has been reduced downtown by 95%. You cannot sit within 14 feet of a building, for instance. The display device stuff, if you have your own chair and you have your own display device, is reduced by 75%. You can't be within 10 feet of a building. What kinds of restrictions in New York City, how much space has been already removed above and beyond the permit process by the so-called time, place, and manner regulations?
Well, the time, place, and manner regulations in New York, as restrictive as they are compared to your city, for example, are quite liberal. We're allowed to have an 8-foot-long display. It has to be 20 feet from a door and 10 feet from a corner, but that gives us 90% of the whole city that we could set up in legally. The kind of restrictions that you have there are quite draconian, certainly to me, and they really fly in the face of every concept about freedom of assembly, which, of course, is also part of the First Amendment. So the First Amendment is freedom of speech, freedom of the press, freedom of religion, and freedom of assembly. The idea of public space is that you can freely go there and associate with people and communicate. Making restrictions that make it impossible to sit down here or stand up there or give out a leaflet here or talk to people over there, these are the exact opposite of what the First Amendment's about. And many times, and having a lawsuit that, like the one that I told you about at the head of this interview, that lawsuit has been going on for 5.5 years at this point. If you get a criminal court case, let's say you sit down on the sidewalk in your city and they arrest you, within a month you're going to have a hearing. Within 2 or 3 months after that, you're going to have a trial. If you lose at the trial, you get the chance to appeal to your state appeals court. If you win, your city is probably going to appeal to the state appeals court, and that ruling from the state appeals court, rather than the initial ruling in the criminal court, that will make legal precedent in your entire state. So that's the relatively quick way to go. That could take weeks, months, or let's say a year. And I don't know what the constitution of the state of California is. I know that in New York State, the state constitution is more generous on the First Amendment than even the federal constitution
is. That's true in California as well.
So it would seem to me that those criminal cases that have now been generated have definitely an opportunity to challenge all of these local restrictions that they're making in your city.
Have you heard of other cities in New York City planning this massive advertising push? Because we've heard nothing about it in Santa Cruz. In fact, it may not be happening here. I know there was a sort of they were trying to put some advertising on the old one. The toilet kiosks, I think you mentioned them in your writing. What's her name? Delacroix? I'm not sure the name of the
Decaux. J.C. Decaux. There's two main companies that do this kind of sidewalk advertising or street furniture. And you can look them up just by typing in street furniture on Google. You'll find thousands of websites describing this. And it's incredibly widespread. It's all over Europe. It's entering Latin America. And I guarantee you that after New York has it, in a big way, it'll be in every town and city in America within 2 or 3 years.
Have other cities, in fact, implemented this thing that the city council in New York City is going to be voting on?
There are other cities that have it. They're relatively small cities. I'm not intimately familiar with them, but I've noticed references to it. I think Boston is one of them, and it's the same companies. It's J.C. Decaux, and it's Clear Channel Communications, which has a subsidiary called AdShell, which some of your listeners may or may not be familiar with. I certainly know them here in New York. These are gigantic companies, international companies. They manufacture what's called street furniture, which is pay toilets, bus shelters, benches, information kiosks, all of which are in and of themselves wonderful things. I mean, I'd have to be crazy to say I'm against pay toilets or bus shelters, let alone benches or information kiosks. I'm not against them. What I'm against is leasing all this public space to these companies, and as part of the agenda of satisfying those companies, taking away the public's First Amendment freedom. And the motivation for cities across America is going to be a very clear one. We're in a terrible economy. Every city in America is cutting back basic services, sanitation, education, you name it. They are desperate for funds, and if corporate America is saying, hey, look, if we can put ads every couple of feet on the sidewalk, how much is that worth to that city? I mean, advertising is a vast financial market, one of the biggest forms of revenue in the world for any corporation. It's the basis for the whole economy, for everything that's sold here. So in a sense, this advertising scheme could become the single biggest business in the United States.
I have a couple of questions for you, Robert. Did you want to finish what you were saying? I'm sorry.
No, it's... Yeah. You know, this is something people need to research a little bit, because if it hasn't come to you yet, it will be, and it's in every instance it's presented in a very deceptive way. Here in New York, the New York Times has written numerous articles about it, but every article is basically goes like this: wow, we're going to have 20 pay toilets installed in New York City. What a wonderful thing it is. And they don't even mention that it's going to mean thousands of advertising kiosks. So who can be against pay toilets? Now, of course, nobody actually wants one on near their property. But the concept in general, in a city where tens of thousands of people are arrested every year for publicly urinating because there's no place to go to the bathroom, the idea that there would be pay toilets, it seems like a pretty good thing, let alone bus shelters and benches and so on. But it's a subterfuge. The 20 pay toilets will probably never even open. If they do, as soon as somebody's mugged or raped or attacked inside of one, they'll all be sealed shut because the city will get hit by a multi-million dollar lawsuit. But the advertising function, which is all that it's really about, will continue. In the same way that, I don't know if you have pay phones in your city, I'm sure you do. Here in New York, there are something like 20,000 payphones on the street at any given time. 75% of them don't work.
Mm-hmm.
But the point of them is not the quarter. The point is the advertising revenue on the sides and the back of the telephone. It's a billboard, and that's all that this is really about, is billboards on public property.
We're talking with Robert Letterman from New York City. For those who want to email in questions, do so pretty quickly. The email address to email in a question, we only have one line, so you can't call him, is rnorse, R-N-O-R-S-E, at hotmail.com. rnorse at hotmail.com. I did have a question before the show, Robert, which was passed on, which is about the blackout, how the blackout has impacted folks in New York City regarding, I'm thinking particularly how it impacted street performers. And I read, as I mentioned to you beforehand, how you felt the New York Times slanted its coverage of the blackout to be critical of and sort of sneer at or disparage different vendors.
Right. Well, the New York Times has a many years long agenda against vending. And here you have a story. A third or a fourth of the nation is completely blacked out. It's ultimately, the reason for it is deregulation, which was done by the former President Bush, G.W. Bush's father. It's one of the last things he did as president, deregulating the electrical companies. And here in New York State, it was done by Governor Pataki. It's got a potentially huge political scandal behind this blackout, and every article the New York Times has about the blackout is featuring the fact that some vendors went out and were selling flashlights or doubled the price of their hot dogs because all the stores and restaurants closed, as if that's the big story. A vendor jacked up his price on batteries. What an outrage. When in fact, the political scandal that they should be talking about why foreign countries run our electrical grid because of deregulation is not even mentioned in the articles. So I found that certainly ironic, but unfortunately typical for the New York Times, which started the Times Square bid, which in today's New York Times, the Sunday Times, you can go online and read it for free, in the city section, they have a big article about the Times Square bid this week located 600 so-called garbage cans in Times Square. Each garbage can contains four sidewalk billboards. And these are all located on public property. The money's not even going to the city. It's going to the Times Square BID, which is a private company.
Now, BID is a business industrial district?
Business improvement district.
Improvement district, that's right.
And these are basically private corporations that took over in each neighborhood. New York City now has 33 business improvement districts. They're basically mini governments with no obligation to follow the United States or New York State constitutions or the laws of the city of New York. They're not voted on by anybody. They're basically just corporate interests that now run the district that they're in. And now they're putting their own garbage cans there and leasing advertising on them in a massive way. Of course, this impacts on the street artists because these garbage cans, like the sidewalk billboards in the Street Furniture Initiative, because of zoning considerations, are going to be located in the exact spots where vending is legal. They're not going to put them, you know, right on the edge of the corner or on a very narrow sidewalk. They're going to put them in the spots that are sufficiently far from a door and the corner for First Amendment vending to be legal. So this is going to displace people selling newspapers, books, art, or anything else that's protected by the First Amendment.
You've also mentioned in your writing the impact of the destruction of newspaper racks, I think I'm thinking of you, and these huge multi-racks that are going up
right.
In different cities.
This is all part of the same street furniture initiative. What the city is doing, what they're letting the bids do, actually, is, I don't know what the situation, again, is in your city, but in New York, at any busy corner, you'll find individual newspaper vending boxes, metal or plastic cubes, that dispense either free or for money, the New York Times, the Post, the Daily News, free papers like the Village Voice and the New York Press, and all the way down the line to such things as the Learning Annex. I'm sure you have something like that in your city,
mm-hmm.
where it's just a free publication, anybody can take it. And based on the First Amendment for all these years, all these media companies and so on have been allowed to just simply set up these boxes. Well, now the bids don't want that. So instead, they have installed their own, they're called pedestals. It's one device that has five boxes in it. And they only are allowing these five papers to be distributed. And, of course, they're charging them a fee, and they have advertising on the back of them. And this is supposed to be a wonderful benefit to the people of New York because it gets rid of clutter, supposedly caused, and trash, caused by these independent free speech newspaper boxes that were everywhere. Well, what's the problem with that? First of all, it's advertising again. Second of all, it's the bid, the Business Improvement District, deciding which newspapers they're going to allow to be distributed. And you don't have to be too much of a theorist to understand that if your paper is attacking business improvement districts in every issue, guess what? You won't be one of the papers distributed through that. It's simply a very convenient form of censorship. And the idea that it would eliminate litter, of course, is ridiculous because the five papers that are allowed to be distributed will cause just as much litter as the other papers did. All it's about is giving corporations a chance to filter speech and to control the free speech rights of the people to their disbenefit. I would love to say they were trying to control it to our benefit, but the whole idea of freedom of speech is that there isn't going to be control, that in control there is automatically this benefit, even if we're living in an ideal world. Frankly, even if you said, Robert Letterman, you can decide which papers could be distributed or which artists could sell their work. I don't want to do that. I'm not qualified. It's not up to me to decide who gets to have free speech. And by the same token, I don't think it's up to Mike Bloomberg or G.W. Bush or the head of some corporation to decide who gets to have freedom of speech.
Right.